There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to episode 51 of the First Exchange podcast with me, your host, Lydia Daydahl. Well, we hit the 50 mark last week and we had lots of celebrations. Thank you very much to everyone who said happy 50th episode to us for last week. We had such a good week, exciting times. So thank you very much for everyone that listened and who sent us a little tweet or a DM saying congratulations. Hopefully you will be celebrating with us on the 100th episode and then beyond. Today I had a fantastic guest in the hot seat with me. If any of you follow me on social media at Lydia Daydahl, you will know that 2 or 3 weeks ago I went on a hike with a guy called Derek Cullen, who has a online vlog series, would we say, called Hiking with Derek. And he basically takes what he says is people of interest and he goes on normally a hike up the mountains or, you know, through the scenic countryside. But because of the current climate with lockdown and different things, we couldn't go up the mountains, so we ended up doing a hike in Dublin, and the footage is brilliant. It's like about a half an hour, the episode. It's on his Facebook. It's Derek Cullen Outdoors. But we had a really good chat about life and you know, just everything that happens to you throughout your life and your experiences and, you know, the good and the bad and everything in between. So after I'd done it, I told Derek, you're going to have to come on the podcast because we had such a good chat and he's so interesting with everything that he's doing with all the outdoor stuff, and he's done loads of traveling. He's walked the entire length and breadth of Ireland. He's been a safari guide in Africa. You know, he's cycled his stories from cycling literally throughout Africa for months on end. He just has so many great stories and great analogies on life and a lot of great metaphors for life that we got to discuss on the podcast. So I will let you go and enjoy episode 51 of the First Exchange podcast. But before I do, do not forget that we have had a wonderful partnership, just start with Dubliner Whiskey. They have given us some delicious bottles of their finest Dubliner Whiskey to give away in a little competition or a little giveaway to all our wonderful listeners. So if you are on Instagram, go to instagram.com/thefirstexchange or on Facebook or Twitter, and you can just simply like us and tag the name of a friend who you would like to share a glass of Dubliner Whiskey with, and you could be in for a chance to win a wonderful bottle. So we've got a couple of bottles to give away and we'll be running the competition for the next couple of weeks. So go, do that. And also, if you want to get some early Christmas presents, don't forget that they have given us an exclusive promo code so that if you go to their website, dld.com, you will be able to avail of 10% off by entering the promo code Lydia. Yes, that's right. My name gets you 10% off Dubliner Whiskey. So once you have entered the competition, go do all your Christmas shopping and buy your friends and family a delicious bottle of Dubliner Whiskey. Right, that's enough about that. Go and enjoy episode 51 of the First Exchange podcast with Derek Cullen, and then tweet us and let us know how you enjoyed it. Derek Cullen, episode 51. Welcome to the First Exchange podcast studio.
Hi, Lydia. Thanks very much.
I feel like I only saw you the other day.
Well, you did.
I did. Let's tell the people what we were doing before we get into all about you.
What we were doing. So I have this series called Hiking with Derek.
Yes.
And I take people of interest, I say, mm-hmm. out for a hike or
a walk.
Me. And that was you the last time. So it was an exception in this case. I take a person of interest out for a hike and we just have a chat. I mean, it's not always, it's not like scripted as such, as you found out.
Yeah.
But I do tend to have a good idea about that person before I go out. So I try to I try to extract certain things from
them. You've done your research. You definitely did. Like, I do that where I'm like, oh, I don't know too much about the person. They come in and they're like, oh yeah, I do open heart surgery. And I'm like, God, I never knew that. But yeah, you had a lot of information, which was great.
Right. Yeah.
Go on. Carry on.
So, yeah, I just take people out for a hike and a chat. So it was yourself, had Pat Dively, Jason Byrne, Kwan Jae Chan. And the whole idea, as I said, is just to have a chat, get to know that person a little bit better than you do, say, if they're on TV, for example, or Jason Byrne. Try and get to the serious side of Jason Byrne a little bit, although that's nearly impossible.
It is.
And yeah, just have a chat. So it worked. The first one was phenomenal with Pat Dively. Mm-hmm. He's a great talker, as you know.
Yeah.
So that went so well. I was like, I got to just keep doing this. So find people of interest that are willing to come out with me into the woods. Yeah. And have a chat. So,
well, I mean, it was like, I know when you asked me to do it, I was like, I told you I was in my group chat, and the girls were like, well, so what are you doing this weekend? And I was like, I'm meeting this guy and we're going to go up the mountain and it's like a chat. And they were like, sorry, do you know him? I was like, no, but he seems really nice. They're like, so you're going up the mountains with a stranger and he's going to film you. You know, but then obviously
I do that with my dates as well.
Tinder. It's such a great approach. But yeah, we didn't end up going up the mountains because obviously lockdown, social distancing, all that kind of stuff. So we'd done a tour of Dublin, which was brilliant.
It's really cool, wasn't
we
it?
Actually came across some really cool spots. Mm. A lot of Oscar Wilde, some paintings, art.
And that part of Dublin too, it's around Baggot Street, so all the famous poets and writers and musicians, they all grew up there and they all played their music there, for example. But that's what I love about it on during lockdown, or say in a Sunday morning, nobody's in town, so you walk around these places and you just have it all to yourself, like we kind of did that day.
So it was really good. It was great.
Different than the mountains or the forest, wherever I normally take people out to do that.
It's weird as well that you have Pat Dively on for the first episode. We obviously had Pat in the podcast as well. We kind of had him on early on, Shane, didn't we, in the studio? And it was his birthday the other day, so I texted him and I was like, happy birthday, Pat Dively. And then he was like, oh, I watched your thing with Derek. It was great, you know. And then obviously you had Jason Byrne on.
Yeah.
Then the following week, Jason Byrne was in here.
Yeah,
it was a weird kind of like serendipity
thing, right?
How
did that happen? But it was serendipity.
Totally just completely just out of like, just out of chance. And it's weird because my best friend's husband, Ian Flynn, is a tattoo artist from High Society Tattoo Studio in Kilkenny. But he was on the podcast months ago. Mm. And he, you know, afterwards I was like, who should I get on? And he was like talking about, what's your man from Peaky Blinders, the Irish guy?
Oh, no. We saw him.
He just said Aidan Gillen. Yeah, we met Aidan Gillen on the walk. You know, I know there's like the pool is very small of Irish actors, but yeah, we were on our way back and Aidan Gillen was on the canal.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So we were trying to like slow down.
We didn't meet him. We followed him with our eyes. And I think if I remember correctly, Lydia said, now I know where he lives.
Yeah, I did. So I actually do know Aidan Gillen. And if anyone wants to join me in sitting outside Aidan Gillen's house, no problem. Let's go do that. But not Aidan Gillen.
Killian Murphy.
So Ian was like, you know, we like our friend group has a little in to Killian Murphy. Another friend of ours knows him quite well, right? Good. So I was like, fuck, I didn't know this. And I was like, can I exploit that friendship for to get him on here? And so we were chatting and then he's like, Jason Byrne. And I was like, Jason's not going to come on this podcast. And we've been he goes out with a very good friend of mine. So he was at a wedding with us. And I was like, I can't ask Jason. He's too big. He's too famous, you know. And then he was like, no, I think he would. But I left it off because I was like, we'll leave it until we're a little bit more kind of established.
He's more than a pleasant surprise, isn't he, Jason?
Ah,
like
totally.
When you meet him in person, off camera or whatever else, he's just totally...
Yeah.
He is him.
Yeah,
he's
natural
and easy to talk to and all that.
I get nervous meeting people who are well known or who have been in the industry for quite a while.
Yeah.
Because sometimes...
like Aidan Gillen.
Sometimes they're not... imagine them as, or you think they're going to be a certain way and then they're not. Sometimes they can be like, you know, sometimes you can meet someone who's in comedy and then you meet them in real life and they're just not funny at all. And you're like,
Can we name names?
No, okay. No. Nobody that's ever been in this studio right now, because I only have people that I really like coming here. But everyone's going to be like, I wonder who that is now. Mm. You know, this is a general statement. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is not kind of fair to say, because we actually did talk about it on the podcast with Jason, where he was saying about when you meet a celebrity or a famous person, he was talking about his experiences. Mm. That if they're not as you expect them to be, they're just fucking human. So they could be having like a down day. Mm-hmm. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and funny you say that. That's what my experience with Jason was. I was like, you know what? Jason's just exactly like us.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, exactly.
Who'd have thunk? So where did the whole hiking with Derek concept, come about? So I know that you're like really big into the outdoors. Mm. You do a lot of vlogging. You've traveled the world. So was it kind of like on the back of your experiences from your traveling over the years?
Yeah, well, I suppose all of the trips that I was known for taking they were all solo, right? I'd go off and take these big long distance adventures in different places. Like I spent 1 year riding a bicycle from Cape Town to Cairo. Mm-hmm. Then I hiked from Mexico to Canada. I walked around Ireland. All of those trips, it was just me.
Yeah.
But I found that a lot of the most enjoyable parts of those trips was when I did bump into people.
Mm.
And then when I got to share it online, for example, with the people that were following it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do something that involved people more. And that's why I came home to walk around Ireland, for example. I wanted to do something here so they wouldn't have to go away to take an adventure like me. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't think it was impossible. And it was just walking, right? So everyone can do that. So that was kind of the basis of it. That's how I didn't have a plan to get to hiking with Derek. Mm-hmm. as a series, but that's kind of where it led. And when I met Pat Dively, I said, look, I'm going to take you. Or he asked me if he could come out wild camping.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. Only if you'll talk to me in the forest for 30 minutes. And we talked longer than that now. But I said on the camera, I want to do this thing called hiking with Derek and see what happens. So we just flipped on the camera. And believe it or not, that was just one take, that video.
Yeah.
And it was just really good. Just something happened during that. Mm. And I went, I should do this with other people. And it's great because instead of me just waffling to the camera and talking about myself, I get to learn from them. And so does everyone else.
Yeah.
And I actually found it strangely enjoyable interviewing someone as opposed to being interviewed, which I'd never had happen before.
Yeah.
So I just found it really interesting and a challenge for me in itself. So everything made sense after doing it. I just said, let's keep doing it.
Absolutely. And you're kind of, we sort of have the same... You know, we spoke about the sort of interviewing elements. We kind of have the same approach in that it's like conversational, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like you want to it's that sort of like round of making the other person feel very comfortable. And so they sort of open up, you know, in that sort of space.
Yes.
But yeah, really, really great. The episodes that you've done so far. But let's talk about obviously the walking around Ireland and the traveling and Canada and all that. Like, was this sort of kind of adventurous sort of side? Is that something that you would have always had grown up, or is it something that came to you later in life? How did you discover your love for the outdoors?
I think when I was young, let's say as a child, it's only looking back now I can see that I was always interested in adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always read the Hardy Boys books when I was a kid, right? Mm-hmm. Or Roald Dahl. These were all books about adventures in one way or another. But I never really, that's not why I started taking these trips.
Yeah.
Right. But looking back, I can say now that, yeah, I was always had that adventurous mind or that curiosity. But all of this happened by accident, really.
Okay.
Because I'll start at the beginning. Back in 2006, 2008, my parents passed away. And that was a really difficult time for me.
Mm.
It got to the point where after they passed away, I just started making all these mad decisions. I was drinking a lot. I was just didn't care about my job anymore, didn't care about music, which I was mad into at the time, didn't care about football. I was the captain of a football team. I was like, don't care, don't even want to watch Man United on TV. And I didn't care about any of that stuff. And even the relationships in my life, like my girlfriend at the time or my family, my friends, I started to just self-destruct on all of those things, right? And this went on for a few years, but it got to the point then where not far from here down the River Liffey, I was standing over the river one day after walking out of work. And I just said to myself, what the hell is going on in your life?
Mm.
Like, what? Like you're so unhappy, you're depressed, you're drinking, you're exhausted physically and mentally. What the hell is going on? And what the hell are you going to do about it? And that last bit was the first time I really said, right, you got to do something. And the next bit is true and it's wild. I definitely don't suggest anyone does this. From that moment, I went into the chap just inside work. He was on the desk and I said, hey, Dave, I'm going home. And he was talking to the boss at the time. Mm. He said, what do you mean you're going home? And I said, I'm going home. And he said, when are you going to come back? I said, I'm not. Not coming back, Dave. And I just walked home.
Big move.
Yeah. And it was like, for me, it was like a Hollywood script.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, that felt good. But now what the fuck am I going to do?
Oh shit, you get home and you're like, damn.
Right. But I actually had a deal. And this is wild to think back, because this is all true. I made a deal with myself that by the time I got back to my apartment door, I was going to walk home.
Yeah.
And by the time I got back to the apartment door, I had to have figured out what I'm going to do next.
Right.
And when I got into my apartment, I put everything I owned up for sale online, including all my guitars, everything I owned. I brought all my clothes down the clothing bank, got rid of them. I booked a flight to Cape Town. And a week later, I was in Africa. And that's where I took my very first outdoor adventure, which was 1 year cycling from Cape Town to Cairo.
God, that's so exciting.
Right.
Is that not really exciting? Yeah. That's kind of like that's the fantasy that many people have, to just fucking sell everything and just, that's it. Just go and just like be in another part of the world and have no, just leave everything behind. And
I think
have no attachments
to
anything.
Great. I would probably like, I enjoy taking trips now.
Yeah.
But I didn't enjoy that one at the time because I didn't know what the hell I was doing, right?
Yeah.
None of it was planned. So I was going over there having never cycled before or done any camp and all that sort of thing. So,
and is fear present when you're, you know, in this? Like, are you absolutely terrified? Like, what am I doing? Like, asking yourself questions like, should I ring my boss again and say, please, can I have my job back? You know, what's going through your mind at this time?
Yeah, well, so I picked Africa and Cape Town. So people sometimes say, why didn't you just start cycling from, you know, Dublin and try and go? And I say, well, no, because then I'd probably turn around and go back home.
Yeah.
On the first day. Whereas if I flew as far away from home as possible to Cape Town, I couldn't go home again.
Dude, so why you couldn't?
That was the kind of method behind the madness. And you're right, though. Like, I was terrified. I was mostly terrified on that bit because, like, never mind the logistics of a trip like that, right? Because I knew nothing about bicycles or how to pack the bike, any of that. Never mind the logistics. I was also thinking, how the hell, where are you going to go with your life after this even?
Yeah.
Like, you just quit your job. Mm. What, like, even after this trip or when this trip fails, what are you going to do then?
Yeah.
So, yeah, all of those questions were in my head at the time. And that was the most scary bit.
Mm.
But then that was eclipsed by the trip itself. Like, some of the situations I would have been in, you know, like the deserts or camping with wildlife around your tent. Like, real primal fear started to come to the fore, and that eclipsed all these little worries that were niggling away at me up until that point.
Yeah, like, it's no longer a squirrel and a fox, you know, like if we were in Ireland. So you're the little difference in wildlife or nature over where you are.
Sheep and deer. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's exactly right, you know. So because all those, let's say, real or bigger, more substantial fears were in my life, things to be concerned about. All the other stuff, all the little stuff started to fade away.
Yeah.
You know, all the little acute anxieties that I had. Mm. And that's not to say I didn't have anxiety. My anxiety went through the roof on this trip because of what I was facing up to. But it did put things in perspective. That was very important. As the trip went on, that became more and more important because I started to see that then. I started to recognize that.
Yeah.
You know?
At what point then did you sit with yourself and go, actually, this is a fantastic idea. Like, this is brilliant. Can you imagine now being back in Dublin and having to work that 9 to 5? Or did it?
I was too busy being scared. Like, the first 3-4 weeks, I cried every day. Like, every day, different times a day, especially in the tent at night.
Yeah.
And then for the second month, it was even more scary because I was in Botswana and there was like lion and stuff like that there, right? Not trying to hype it up, but that's what was actually there. So I was really scared, and to the point where I fainted one night or I wet myself, things like that. So I didn't enjoy that trip for the first 6 months. You know, I was always looking ahead going, what's next like? And I couldn't even turn around at that point because I was just going back to more of the same. So I had to just keep going, right?
Yeah.
So it was very difficult to enjoy that trip. I think if I was to even go and do it now, I'd probably be just as scared.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest with you, because they're real fears and dangers that you kind of have to deal with over there.
So what are the lessons that you learnt along that trip? Like, what, in terms of, not necessarily from like, I don't know what the word is, not from like the traveling aspect, but I suppose from a spiritual point.
Metaphorical?
Yes, exactly the word.
Well, the biggest thing was fear, right?
Yeah.
I just mentioned that I was always afraid in the trip, but it helped me put things in perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So the biggest thing I learned about fear, this happened every day for that whole year. And I had an exact moment where it really became clear. So everything that I was afraid of on that trip, either number one, didn't happen, or number two, was extremely unlikely or irrational. Okay, and the more I went through different experiences, the more I realized that was actually the truth. And it made me realize that all the things that I was afraid of back home, all the anxieties I had, whether they were social anxieties, any type of anxieties, they either weren't going to happen, or else they really didn't, or they didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that really was nailed in was in Botswana. I came into this village with my bicycle, had a big beard at this stage. And this man walked up to me and he said, "Where are you going?" Mm-hmm. I said, "The next town." He said, "Okay, on this," pointing at my bicycle. I said, "Yeah." And he laughed because, you know, who, a white man on a bicycle looks really weird there. I said, "Yeah, I'm going to the next town." He said, "Oh, be careful, those people there, they're very dangerous." I said, "Okay." And he said, "They'll steal your money." I said, "All right, well, thanks for that. I have to go that way. There's only one road, so I have to go to the next town, but cheers." So I got to the next town later that day, probably about 5 hours later. And it was really bizarre because this other man walks up to me in almost identical fashion as the previous town. He said, "Oh, where did you come from?" I said, "I came from that town," and I had the name of the town at the time. I can't remember what it is now. I said, "I came from that town." He said, "Oh, on this?" I pointed at my bicycle. I said, "Yeah, on this." He said, "Did they take your money?" I said, "No." And he said, "Oh, they eat people there." So, with that, right, of course, these people.
They were having you on. You pass and they're like on the phone to each other. "Did you get my alcohol from there? I told them they had people." Yeah.
That's probably what they were doing. Damn. I got paid. But the message there and what actually happened was that those people were serious, right? They really were terrified of the people in the next town, even though they lived beside each other.
Yeah.
So the metaphor on this was the metaphor my whole trip was that they don't even know about each other and yet they're afraid. And what they're actually thinking, like these people steal from you or they eat people, is 100% not true. These were the friendliest people you'll ever meet in your life. Everyone in both of these villages.
That's a very good analogy. Because that's something that, well, you can apply that to almost everything in life, can't
you?
How many times, like, think of anything in life that people come up against that is against their, like, belief systems or what they're told or what their environment has shaped them to believe or to become. And, you can take a lot from that, I guess.
Definitely. And it was that actually, up until that moment, I was having to deal with fear every day, as I said. Mm-hmm. But from that moment on, I started to really get to grips with how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Right. And it all comes down to the story that's in your head then. You know, being aware of the thoughts that are in your head and catching them as they come out. Mm-hmm. So there were real dangers on the trip, as I mentioned, like animals and the heat. You can get heat exhaustion there, things like that. But if you put them into perspective, there's ways to stay away from those things.
Yeah.
You're not always, you know, a lion's not just going to jump into your tent every night. Because this was a big one with the animals there too, right, that I learned was that the wildlife in Africa, including lion, are not interested in us. And they're also afraid of us. They don't want, all they want is our food at most. They come out of curiosity or because they smell what's in the area and they're not used to it. But they don't want to be bothered any more than we want to be bothered by them.
Yeah.
So the more I camped there, for example, in these areas, the more I realised that. And I say that also, I worked as a safari guide for 3 years in Africa.
This is my favourite story. This is my favourite bit. Because so that is, I think secretly that is my dream, to be like a safari guide. Yeah.
Yeah, you should go and do it.
I should just pack in. Sorry, Shane, can you take my, accept my resignation?
I'm going to warn you though, it looks really weird when Irish people go on holiday and their safari guide is Irish.
Yeah. Did you have loads of Irish people that would like turn up?
Not loads, a lot of English, a lot of Kiwis, Australian, American. Not many Irish, a few though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gas. Anyone that you ever knew? Did you ever like come across someone that you knew?
No, but actually I joined a rescue team being me and one other person to go into a place in Botswana. It's called the Magadi Gadi Pants, where all the elephant do their migration.
Yeah.
We went in to rescue a group of people that got stranded.
Yeah.
And we went in and they were Irish.
No way.
So they had an Irish paddy coming in to rescue them. That was really bizarre.
That's so good.
I'm still in touch with them today, actually, but that was a really weird one.
Amazing. So you were 3 years as a safari guide.
Yeah, like
how does one get into safari guiding? Like, do you rock up and be like, here's my CV, I've come with my bike, you know, can I get a job? Like, how did you fall into it?
It's a bit harder now because they're trying to make sure that locals get the jobs, right? Yeah. Which is fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
But back when I was applying, it was a bit of a free-for-all.
Yeah.
In my case, honestly, I just bombarded these companies with emails for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
None of them replied. And then I got a random phone call one day from someone asking if I wanted to interview for the job.
No, and do you need a set of skills? Like, what do they look for?
So I'd actually taken a trip in Africa before for 10 weeks on a tour. So that was my experience there. I was a tourist there. And that's all they needed. They said, we'll train you up. You come over, train you for 2 months, and then off you go.
Wow. So, like, what is a day in the life of a...
It's not just safari. So we take them everywhere.
Yeah.
So we would take them into Serengeti, Masai Mara National Park, and we go wild camping in there, all that stuff.
Wow.
But we'd also take them the whole way through Africa to different towns, villages, attractions.
So is this like a day thing, or do you take people for like weeks on end?
I took them for weeks, sometimes two weeks, but a lot of the trips for 10 weeks.
Wow, that's really exciting.
Like Big Brother on a you know, a bus. It was pretty intense.
Did you film any of it?
No.
That would be a good, I mean, if you were allowed to film, like people would probably be like,
you don't want to see, there's a lot of drama on those trips. You know?
Is there?
Oh man, there's so much
drama. That's exactly why you should be filming them. Give us an idea, set the scene. Like what kind of drama is over there?
As they're, say like you're their tour leader, you're automatically then their doctor, their mother, their father, their counsellor. Yeah. You're everything.
Yeah.
So you just get bombarded all day, not just with questions. They'll be waking you up. Then you have to go party with them too if they want to have a few beers.
Yeah.
And then you have to get up at like 3 a.m. and start the fire and get breakfast ready for everyone and ward off hyena trying to get to the food. So it's a really mad lifestyle. Very rewarding because you get to do cool stuff with people. But there's a lot of drama. And when I say drama, like, people fight on these trips a lot because they're together all the time. Yeah.
Well, this is exactly that's exactly the thing. I'm like 10 weeks with a group of people, and especially when most people that are doing it, I imagine as tourists, maybe are out of their comfort zone a little bit in that sort of environment, you know, and like how that affects people, you know, like when Well, I'm a little bit better now, but back in the day before I was enlightened, when I used to get out of my comfort zone, I used to get like really bad anxiety, and I would project it as like aggressive. Like I'd snap. I'd be like, you know, I could be really aggressive and snappy with people.
Yeah.
And it would only be like my close people that would be like, it's okay, Lydia, like relax, you know, you'd be grand. And I'm like, okay, I'm just out of my comfort zone here, just like freaking out. So it's when you put loads of people like that into a group, I imagine it's like a melting pot.
You know,
for a
psychologist that have a field day watching this happen. Yeah. And often like what I realized from doing this so long was your job is to sit back and observe and get involved when you have to.
Yeah, pick your battles.
Exactly, because you have to be their friend at the end of the day too, right?
Yeah.
And you have to manage that relationship of take me serious, but I'm a fun guy to be around too.
Yeah.
So they'll all start sleeping with each other too. It gets even more complicated.
Oh,
and then
they
fight because someone slept with two people on the trip.
Yeah.
So all
or someone's husband finds out.
Right. That's happened too. So, you know, there's all of this stuff going on. And at the end of the day, you're also trying to organise their trip and keep them safe and all of this stuff. And then someone else has malaria and you have to deal with that.
Oh.
So it's really intense, but it's interesting.
This is the best movie we've never seen, is what this is.
Right.
Did you do anything like journal or keep diaries or anything that you could publish?
I did not, no.
Oh.
No, when I wasn't doing that job, like when I was traveling around Africa, I wrote and I made videos about certain things. But honestly, when you're doing that job, you don't have a minute. You don't have a second.
How do you change as a person in those circumstances? So obviously we talked about the fear and, you know, obviously being out of a comfort zone.
Yeah.
But how, you know, the way people always say, like, traveling is one thing, but to really experience the world and to find out about yourself, you need to go alone.
Mm-hmm.
How does it differ when you're alone and you're trying to meet new people or you're traveling and, you know, there is all these different emotions that are going on.
Mm. I think the biggest impact will take place when you're alone. Right,
yeah.
When you take a trip alone, whether that's backpacking alone or whether you go on a multi-day hiking trip alone, whatever it might be, when you go alone, I think you open yourself up to way more new experiences. Mm-hmm. I think everyone knows that, right? But that's not to say you shouldn't do stuff with people either, because I don't know about you, but the most enjoyable experiences I have been with other people.
Yeah.
You know, and a great example of that actually is I did, you know, the Camino de Santiago.
I've heard of it, but I don't know too much about it. Please tell us all about it.
It's a long distance walk across Spain. Okay. It's 700K.
Is a Camino a long distance walk?
Yeah, well, Camino means the way.
Right.
It's just like the trail, the way.
Okay, so what's the holy one?
Well, that is it. So it's a pilgrimage. People walk from, there's all different Caminos. They go all over Europe and a lot of them lead to a place in Spain called Santiago because St. James buried his ashes there. Something along those lines. I'm not religious, as you might tell.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just go for the wine, right? I almost got away with that.
Anytime I hear Camino, I just think of all the nanas from my local church when I was growing up. They were like, oh, we're going to the Camino, you know.
You'll meet them there. They'll be all pissed on wine, though. Yeah,
yeah totally. But Santiago, what...
So that one goes all the way across.
What book with the alchemist? Who wrote The Alchemist? Paul Coelho.
Coelho, yeah. Paulo Coelho.
Someone in his... Your man's name in that book is Santiago, isn't it?
Is it?
Is
I don't remember. Don't recall. I don't know. What about him anyway?
I was just trying to be really intelligent and try and link up. I was like, Santiago, the Camino, the obstacle is the way, Paul Coelho. Anyway, carry on. Nanas and wine, where are we?
Well, that's a really popular long distance walk. A lot of people do like, say, 2 weeks on the Camino every year. And it's so a lot of people actually do it for religious reasons. And then a lot of people do it for other reasons, like personal reasons, like for a common one is someone in the family passed away, or if someone went through a divorce, or someone had a really bad breakdown in their life, they went, you know what, I'm gonna walk the Camino.
Yeah.
And I understand why it works for those people too. I haven't walked it myself.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason I walked it, by the way, was like all my trips were alone, and I thought I was afraid to do the Camino because I thought it was going to wreck my head being around so many people.
Yeah.
But actually, that's what I loved about it, was all the people that were there.
Yeah.
And the different stories you got to hear. And it was all stories like this, right? Mm. You know, that really just exceptional stories. So people do that long distance walk. And that was one that I hadn't planned on doing, but really made all the difference. And I'm saying that because a lot of my favorite experiences in travel happened on that Camino when I was around all these people of all different ages and different backgrounds. And anyone could do that, by the way. It's just walking every day.
Yeah.
You can walk a short distance every day or a long distance. It doesn't matter. So I just really love that kind of egalitarian side of the trip where anyone can do this and everyone's involved.
It's class, isn't it? When you're saying about it, the reasons why people might go on a Camino.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, what is that? Is it the obviously it's the to get away and to escape from, you know, their reality for, you know, a week or for 2 weeks. But the walking thing, like, what is it in about, you know, even if you look at from a mental health exercise point of view, when, you know, something goes wrong in your life or you've had an argument with someone will say, you know, take a walk or go for a walk. Like, what is that about walking?
Björk, Icelandic singer.
I love her. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
She's a good saying that. She always tells her friends and family, if you're ever having a shit time or you're watching or listening to social media too much or watching social media too much, she says, she tells her friends and family to go for a walk and see how they feel afterward.
Mm.
And the reason she says it is because social media, if you spend too long in it, and this is not just social media, like watching TV down the YouTube rabbit hole, whatever, says it's got that same feeling as though you've eaten 8 hamburgers.
Yeah.
You know, that real lethargic, I feel crap about myself feeling.
Yeah.
So she's like, if you go for a walk, it has a way of taking away those cobwebs and dusting it off and giving you what I believe is perspective or context. And that's missing when you're engrossed in something like social media, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's what I think about the Camino, by the way. You don't want to tell people this there, but it's not, for me, it's not the Camino and the religious factor that makes it so special. Mm. The transformation for people comes in the walking. The fact that they're just doing something real basic. They're stripping down their life. They're getting rid of all the junk, all the crap, not just from their body, but from their head. All they have to do every day is walk from one town to the next. I can do that. Anyone can do that. Mm. That is so simple. When was the last time your life was that simple?
Exactly, exactly. So in the perspective, what, like, break that down again. What, like, is it the process of walking, their mind is distracted, they're analysing their life as they knew it, and they're able then to get the perspective and to say, I don't need to do X anymore, I have to let Y go, you know, there's no need for me to be, whatever it is in their life that needs to change, or change the course of direction or something. Is
it what you just said, people do this sort of thing, this type of trip, because they want change, right? Yeah. And it's because, usually because something's happened in their life or something hasn't happened, they're bored, whatever. Mm-hmm. So they'll go for that reason. Yeah. But the reason it works so well, I believe, and the reason it's so, let's say, therapeutic, and the reason it's so meaningful is because they've escaped what we're in the midst of right now, which is the city. The busy life where we're always distracted by something or someone. And that can be what we just mentioned, social media or TV, YouTube, also your friends, your family. There's very few times when I am alone with my thoughts. And that's why I get outdoors so much and do all this walking. And that's what happens on the Camino. You're alone with your thoughts for the first time. Mm-hmm. And for some people, for the first time they can remember.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think so many people are, one, afraid to sit with themselves and hear their own thoughts, and then also haven't done it. Like, when it happens for the first time, and some, you know, you could have, and it sounds so like mad to say, like, someone could be in their 30s and they're finally, they're hearing their own voice for the first time. Mm. And what I mean by that is they've taken the time to sit and reflect and assess.
Yeah.
And how is it that from age zero to that whatever point in your life that happens for you, why does it take so long? Why are we so detuned or desensitized from actually listening to ourselves and our own thoughts? For me, I always reference my own thoughts as spirit. I don't know if you know Paul Check. I think we spoke about Paul Check when we were doing your hiking with Derek series. But he always says that, like, spirit, the concept of spirit is your soul. It is your connection to the higher, your consciousness, essentially. But, like, I mean, my sort of, like, I always mess in enlightenment, but my enlightenment happened when I was like 30, 31, through the medium of jiu-jitsu, through then having this quest for, like, a better lifestyle and a better life for myself. But, you know, I think I got to about 3 years into meditation and therapy and, like, really investigating my own thoughts and my mind. And I remember being, like, really upset that I'd spent, like, essentially from, like, my teens all the way through to 30, 32, 33, and had never even, like, stopped to question or investigate any of the thoughts that were leading me to maybe make wrong choices or wrong actions. And I got really upset over it. I was like, Jesus, if I had just done this 10 years ago, I could have saved myself a lot of hassle. But then obviously you everything happens for a reason and you get to a point.
Hindsight is easy too, right?
Absolutely.
Like, we can all say that even about last year. I look back and think, what was I doing? I wasted a whole 2 months. Yeah. You know, all I did was eat donuts.
Now that we're in this situation, I'm like, you know, that one day that you took off, you know, over the 6 month period. Yeah. God damn, you should have worked.
You know, Elon Musk, he once said that the hardest thing in life is figuring out what questions to ask yourself.
Yes.
And I really like that. There's a few different things he's probing at right there. And one of them is that we're so obsessed with looking for answers all the time. Mm. We don't actually stop to think about what the questions are.
Yes.
So if you don't have the right question, or if you don't have questions, then how are you going to find an answer in the first place?
Yeah.
So that's what I liked about it. And I think you were asking why people find it so hard to be alone with their thoughts or to ask themselves the difficult questions in life. And that's because it is hard, especially when it's your own ego at stake.
Yes.
And that for me was when I did the Africa trip we talked about, the first time I was in the Namib Desert's the oldest, driest desert in the world, right? Mm. So when I came up to that, it was week 3 in my cycle across Africa. And I was like, oh my God, I can't go into this desert on a bicycle. What the hell am I doing? But once I got to the middle of that and I was sitting there with the fire, my tent, my bicycle, and just surrounded by desert and the stars up above, I was like, wow, this is an unbelievably beautiful place. But I was plagued because that was the experience of being alone for so long. I was forced to face up to the questions that I'd been avoiding all my life. There was no one there to distract me from them. There was nothing to distract me from them. I had to ask myself the hard questions, and they led to very dark places. That's why I cried so much, right? That's why I was sitting there so much going, oh my God, I'm not actually the great person I thought I was. You know, I drink too much. I've destroyed all these relationships, you know, and why am I blaming everyone and everything around me for that happening? It was my fault. So it's very hard to do that with yourself. And I found it that way because it destroys you. You know, you're literally beating yourself up. But Joe Dispenza says as well, you got to be ready to unlearn all the crap before you can learn new stuff and replace it. Right. And that's what I was doing back then without knowing. I can say that with hindsight because it's easy. But yeah. I was unlearning all this crap that had made me who I was, all the bad stuff. And you have to acknowledge it before you can unlearn it, of course. But that was the first step. You can't go anywhere unless you figure out what you've done wrong in the past. You know, you can't address all that stuff until you figure that out.
That's such an interesting chunk that you just said there, because it's like, again, you can apply that to so many things with life, and how you have to be open minded to all aspects of life, because you have to be open minded to all aspects of life because you have to be able to have the ability to change, and not only maybe your views or your beliefs, but you also have to be able to change yourself to evolve to get to that place. And it's like, you know, I think in the last couple of years, the terminology toxic spirituality has kind of been bandied about kind of a bit. And it's this whole the rise of social media and obviously yoga and this whole you know, it's kind of this Instagrammable sort of lifestyle of holistic health and, you know, and spirituality. But it's sort of it kind of goes against everything that, you know, spirituality is or enlightenment is, because it's all for feeding the ego or to portray an image. And what you mentioned there, the real path to quote unquote enlightenment is looking at your ego, looking at your shadow, doing the shadow work, which is traumatic. It's not easy at all. It's the hardest thing. It's almost you know, I remember trying to explain it to someone before, and it's continuously having to go through a burning fire, you know, and know that when you go through it, you're going to get really burnt, but you still have to do it.
Right.
Because when you get to the other side, it's, you know,
once you find the gold.
Yes.
You know,
And
with social media, I don't want to keep going back to it, but a lot of people hate it, right? And I understand why a lot of people don't like social media and that it distracts us from real life, let's say.
Yeah.
But social media is also truth. And the reason a lot of people, I believe, don't like it or have a big problem with it is because we love it when it makes us feel good, but we hate it when it makes us feel bad.
Yeah.
We love it when people like our posts or share our posts, but we hate it when nobody's paying attention.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if that's true, what I just said, well, then the problem isn't social media. Then the problem is what's going on.
Yes. Can we get a clap here? Yes, that's exactly it.
And just, I'll also say that I have a problem with social media just as much as everyone else does. You know, I have to take myself away from it. I feel like it's a hazard of what I do sometimes, you know.
It is for me. I feel like, you know, social media is this big devil with a chain on the end of his hands, and I am at the end of that chain. And he is just floating around, just throwing me all over this. It is the biggest, I have built 6 years of, you know, this, everything that I have in my life is because of social media. It is on the back of social media. But yes, it is a crutch that I just cannot.
Well, you know,
kick.
Social media, you're calling it the ball and chain, and that right there.
Yeah.
That analogy. I think it's true, but that ball and chain has always been there. Social media and the internet has made us face it a lot faster than we would have done. What's bad about us as people and society, for example, that's being exposed now on Facebook. Yeah. We're seeing what we really don't like about each other and what we really don't like about the way the world works. But that is the way the world works. Mm. There's people out there that are just totally consumed by what they look like or they're really materialistic, and good for them, all power to them. But there's some of us that hate that.
Yeah.
But that's not about, you know, that's something that we have to deal with in our minds.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. You know, like, thankfully a lot of like my, you know, my anxieties, will say, of how I look and how I'm perceived, and they've kind of gone now as I've, like, you know, I'm 36, so you kind of don't have time for that anymore when you're this age and you've got, when you're busy, you know. But I, you know, if I'm on there, like, say for example, if I'm doing Q&A's, a big thing is I'll have like younger girls that follow me that will say, you know, where did you get your lips done? They're fab. And I'd be like, I actually, these are, you know, my lips. And they're like, no way. Yep. And I'm like, I have my lip gloss. I use this lip gloss. How do you look like that at your age? Like, you know, do you have any Botox? You know, like, and then you'll get from guys like, love that you're just like, you know, real natural, and like, you just come on here as you are, you like don't care kind of what you look like, whatever. Yeah. I'm like, what? I was like, actually, like, I'm trying to make an effort here, you know what I mean? But it's like,
it's like a backhanded compliment.
It's like a back, I was like, what am I meant to do? Like, as if you're, you know, I'm meant to like be fucking Botoxed up and like have fake lips and like whatever else, and you know, have my ass out for photographs. But it's just, it's just such a, you just have to learn to like let it go over your head.
I just made a mental note not to insult you or compliment you, because it can go either way.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but you just get that odd person where you're like, fuck off, mate. Yeah. I'm gonna have to get a bleeper. I'm swearing loads this week, aren't I? It's the effects of the second lockdown. But so it is a minefield. But I also, you know,
good for you, because I find that, even now, I find that difficult, not paying attention to what other people. I'm terrible at taking criticism. It's one thing about me. I'm really bad at it. It's not a good trait.
I'm really good at taking criticism. I'm not so great at taking compliments.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not good at when someone compliments me or... And not necessarily to do with my looks or anything, in any context, you know, if somebody, even for like work-wise, business-wise, someone tries to tell me that, you know, like, oh, geez, you're doing really well, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like...
That's a very Irish thing, though, isn't it?
What are they talking about? No, I'm not.
You're Irish, so you have to be humble about everything, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of beaten into us from a young age, too, to be humble and not to be bragging. And so when someone compliments you, it's like, stop that, will you?
Because you meet... You know, the way you meet other people from like that are sort of a similar ilk or in the same industry as you from a different country. And when you meet them for a catch up or a call or whatever, they're very different. You know, they're very like, I'd never tell my friends, oh, I'm after getting this. And like, I'm, you know, I'm after doing this interview and oh, I'm on TV. I just don't tell anyone about it. I just say work. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm working at the weekend. Oh, I'm in the UK. I'm doing a bit of work. You know, like, I'd never... go into, I'm on the cover of like RSVP. What's that magazine called?
RSVP. How do I know that and you don't?
Or hello, I'm doing Hello magazine this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe it is an Irish thing.
I think it's something to do with it, all right, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Criticism, I don't mind at all. I like criticism. I think it's good, constructive criticism, to be I always look at it as a challenge.
Right.
Do you know that when someone says something to you and you want to punch them in the face?
You see, I'm dreaming about the day when someone...
Can I finish that before you say it? Like, I don't mean I want to punch someone in the face. Right. Like, I mean, you get the feeling, I want to punch him or her in the face.
Right.
Then you go, what is that? What feeling is that?
Right.
What has it invoked? And then you're able to just breathe and say, okay, that's interesting. That's a good, I'll take a look at that. Or,
and that's a thing, right?
Is that the me thing?
Well, I mean, whatever way you react to that, it's down to you. What's inside, how you're feeling.
Yeah, it's a challenge on my work that I've done on myself. Mm. So it's kind of like, in that moment, I now have that split second where I breathe and I go, okay, so are you going to be old Lydia in this moment or are you going to be new?
I can't do that.
So what way are you in terms
of...
Well,
I'm working on it, like you say.
Yeah.
But when I get criticism, even if it's constructive and even if I know it's constructive, I'm still like, not punched him in the face, but I'm still like, oh, go away.
Yeah.
So I'm still at that point. Mm. I always rate, like, I have an awareness of what I'm thinking, but those first few seconds, maybe that's the Taurus in me. I'm like, stop that now.
So
my position, I have to get used to it. Yeah. And I have to deal with it. That's why I'm quiet a lot
of the
time.
If you're on the internet, which you are, and you've got a big following, so you have to be able to not listen.
Right.
The difference is not listen to what they're saying,
right,
but be able to see it and hear it and let it wash over you and go, that's just your opinion.
Mm.
And the more I understand about people and their opinions and their perceptions is all to do with their environment, how they've been raised and, you know, what's going on from inside them and, you know, their own shadow and their own projections. You learn to kind of get past it a little bit better. When I was in the band in my 20s, if I'd read an article where a journalist had like not made me out to be absolutely fantastic, I would literally, it would set me off for weeks. I would just be an absolute antichrist. I would be really, really upset over it. And then I would just be a nightmare for everyone because I would take it so personally that, you know, they had criticized the performance or the record. And I would just see that as black and white. They are criticizing you because you are not good enough.
Right.
And then it would like almost be like an embarrassment that I would have to then continue to be on stage or to do immediate interviews. And it was kind of like, sort of, I felt like it was a self-harming thing where like, they're just going to write shit about me and I have to do it. And I have to I'm being kept in this spotlight continuously. And I'm not really that comfortable.
Whereas if it was to happen now, are you saying that you wouldn't value their opinion so much or value their opinion above your own?
I just don't think that it would affect me as much. You'd still be like, oh, come on, like, this is a, you know.
You know Brené Brown?
Yeah, yeah.
She's a really great thing that I always try to keep in mind. I think it was last year I heard her say this. She said that when it comes to criticism or advice, you know, a lot of advice is backhanded advice where someone's actually just trying to criticize what you've done.
Yeah.
But she says a great way to deal with criticism or advice when you don't think you really need it and you don't think the intent is good, is to remember that unless that person is in the arena and taking shots themselves and taking risks every day, they don't get to criticize or give you advice.
What's that? That's off that quote. It's not the man in the arena, it's the... Can't remember.
Is this Brené Brown as well?
She got it from that really famous... Is it Roosevelt?
Oh, yeah. Teddy Roosevelt. Could be. Yeah, it could be. That's what her first book was based on anyway. Daring Greatly.
The man in the arena. It's riveting listening. Oh, it's Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah. Roosevelt.
Yeah.
It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, and it's gone off the screen, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. God,
that's deep.
That was
it?
A long.
It's
I
great
kind of,
though. And Daring Greatly really is the name of Brené's book as well.
Oh, there we go.
That's where she got it from.
And I support Spurs, and their slogan is. Big Perth fan. To dare is to do.
To dare
is like, to dare do?
I've never heard that before, right?
To dare is to do, yeah. Actually, it's a bit of a weird one, but it's
one of the smartest things my nephew ever said. He wrote this down. I think he was 6 at the time, around that time. Anyway, he's 15 now.
Yeah.
But I remember he wrote down, I just thought, he's only like 6 and he wrote this down. But he wrote down on a piece of paper one day in his house, "Don't tell me your dreams, show them." I was like, where the hell did
wow.
she get this from?
Now, how old was he at this time?
He was only, it was quite a long time ago. So it was about 7 years ago.
Wow.
Or 6 years ago. But yeah, when I read that, and I always remember that, because I was like, I'm going to keep that. That is smart.
Say that again. What is it?
Don't tell me your dreams. Show them. So
that's
in other
really
words,
good.
You know, stop saying you're going to do this and that. Show me. You know, everyone can talk, but let's see you do a bit of walking there, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember seeing him write that. I was like, wow, that's brilliant.
Less talking, more walking. As they say. You can take that
that's
one an, too if you want for the next
another
one.
Another Tottenham Hotspur quote. Less games, more wins.
Yeah, feck yeah. But yeah, although we're not doing too bad this season. But as a collective, it's like, you know, it's so... I don't know, it's good to have someone like, we're of such different backgrounds, but yet, you know, there is a common ground of like that sort of what you've been through has led you to where you are, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you always, when you go off and try and do something that's interesting or different, you know, against the grain, let's say, or let's just say you're in the theatre, taking shots, taking risks, you always recognise people that are doing that too. Doesn't matter what they're doing. Like I have a couple of friends that are musicians, and one of them's doing really well here now in Ireland.
What's her name? His name?
Anto Fury. So he's the Young Focuses band.
Oh.
So they're fairly successful as far as Irish bands go, to say the least. And I just recognise that in him, like the passion he has for music. But we're totally different in many ways, but we both recognise that in each other and support each other. But it doesn't matter, like you're saying, it doesn't matter the profession or what it is that they're doing. You know, you can always be inspired by someone that has a passion and a fire inside, because if you take the context of what that means, you can use that to do something of your own. And that's what's important about it. So when you see other people doing stuff that's risky or that's out of the box, you go, that's one of my tribe over there, you know?
And it's funny as well, because I think this year, with everything that's happened, there's been two different types of people. You know, the people who were drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning and making banana bread, and then there was like those
is that what you were making? Yeah.
Listen, I dabbled for the first couple of weeks, okay?
This banana bread's
this
great.
This banana bread is so tasty at 9 in the morning with my Rioja. You know, there was like the people who like just kind of sat in the doom of everything that was going on. But then the people that were working for themselves, or who had passion projects, or kind of like had a little flame inside them for something, they totally capitalized on it. I mean, this is a sweeping generalization there, but a lot of people that I know, you know, the people that maybe had a little side hustle were like, God, perfect time to like put this into kind of like a full-time thing now, and like see how, where it's going. Or again, it's that sort of thing of like stripping the fat, I suppose, of you know, where you are in your life now and where you want to be.
I recognise what you're saying a lot. I relate to it, because especially this year, I had a really hard time at the start of lockdown. Like most people, all my work and what I do was taken away. All the talks I had arranged, they were all cancelled, for example. And for the last 6 months, I've been sweeping floors. And that's what I had to go and do to kind of make ends meet and pay the bills, because I didn't want to take the payment, right?
Yeah.
But after about a month or a month and a half, I had to have a talk with myself, and I was quick to have that talk, but I think it's because of what I've been through. I didn't stay down for too long this time, you know what I mean? Whereas I would have stayed down for years in the past had this happened. But that little talk to myself was like, you know what, you got to get up and do something about it. Stop waiting for things to change, stop waiting for everything to go back to normal, all that crack. Get up and do something about it. And that's actually when Hiking with Derek started. So when Pat Dividy came out with me, and then yourself and Jason, all that started. That's when I relaunched my clothing brand. That came from that period too.
Out there?
Out there. O-E-T-D-A-R-E. Out there.
Out there. Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
Right. And that's actually also the period just after that when I'm working with an outdoor store here in Dublin now. That came out
amazing.
Of it too. That had never happened before. So all of these things came after that little talk, right? But believe me, I was knocked flat. by this when it happened and all the worries and anxieties it brought up. It was like, what's going on? Where's this going to go? Mm-hmm. So I really was KO'd by it. I totally relate to people that might even still be in that position.
Yeah.
But I do think a little talk with yourself or a little self-coaching is the way out.
So future plans, like what was, now that you've obviously, hiking with Derek was the success, you know, episode 5 was probably the most successful.
That was just the highlight of my life, you know. Even Aidan Gillen messaged me and he said, I heard that amazing celebrity talking to you the other day.
I bet he asked, have you got her address?
Right. So he was asking if you want to go on Peaky Blinders.
Yes.
And they're going to make a whole new Game of Thrones season for you.
Fantastic.
Just so you can star in it.
Great. Can't wait. And that is an exclusive here on the First Exchange. But so the future, like obviously we've kind of established that everything that you're doing or have done has led you to this path that, you know, you're kind of like, as you're going, things are opening up for you.
Yeah.
So do you have any goals, plans, dreams?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of following it now. Like, it's only more recently things have come together, right? I couldn't get sponsor for years, so I created my own. That's why I created the clothing brand. And now I just so happen to get a sponsor involved. And other things are starting to come together that are making money too. So things are working out in that sense. I don't have to worry about making money anymore so much from what I do. And I can focus on what I'm passionate about. And I haven't quite figured that out fully. It will involve taking a lot more outdoor trips, making videos about them and doing documentary style trips in that way. But there's lots of other stuff I'd like to do. You know, I'd like to do a lot of basically work that will help other people, the people that follow me. You know, and the people that want to get involved and maybe do stuff like me, I want to let them join me in some way. And if not, I want to help them do something on their own. So I haven't figured that out fully, but I am working on it. Like this month, we have a walk every day in November. There's 400 people in that.
Well, let me just continue. I'll get this message up. Go on.
Right. We've hidden the group at the moment because there was too many people joining.
No way.
But we did this last year with 100 people and it was phenomenal what happened. And like there's three people that were in the group that are, one of them's now like a certified health coach, a nutritionalist.
No way.
There's loads of them that still walk every day and they've lost 50, 60 pounds, all that sort of thing. But that was a phenomenal experience for me because it was something I could share with them and help them with. And it was something that they had that was their own. So that meant more to me than any of the stuff that I do for myself, for example, or the trips that I take. I really got a big kick out of it, right? Maybe for my ego too, in a little bit.
Of course,
but
yeah.
At the end of the day, it felt meaningful to me and I don't question that. So that's when I really said, right, I got to do more of this stuff, whatever it is, however I can help other people, I'm going to do that. And as you say, it's only opening up now. Like things are coming together. I don't have to worry about making money all the time anymore, which really held me back in the past. Now I can focus on the passion and kind of say, right, where am I going to go with this? Like with the clothing brand, going to make the biggest outdoor clothing brand in the country. Where am I going to set it up? So I'm going to go up to Donegal this week. I'm going to base myself up there in a little cottage, which I think I told you about already.
You did send me a photograph. It looks beautiful.
Right. So I'm able to commit to all these things and just see where it takes me. But I'm not going to lie and say I have this big, perfect roadmap laid out. Let's just see where it goes. Things are working out well now and I'm happy and that's it.
Fantastic. To add to your November challenge.
Yeah.
My mom messaged me when you tagged me in your Instagram story to say you're coming on the podcast today. Yeah. She said, can you tell him your mom is joining the challenge walk for November?
Really?
So there you go.
Hello, and mammy. Yeah, hello. That's great. Delighted.
Do you know what's nuts about my mother actually messaging that? Because I told you when the night before, or the couple of days before I was doing hiking with Derek, and my dad put a link to one of your, I think it was, what's the chef?
Oh, Kwan Jae Chan.
Kwan Jae Chan. Yeah. I think it was his episode.
Yeah.
My dad put a link in our family WhatsApp group and was like, hey, Lydia, you should check out this guy. He's very good. And I was doing the walk with you that weekend.
It's weird. Yeah.
And I don't tell them, like, you know, like if I'm on the Elaine show, I'll be like, I'm on the Elaine show Tuesday, tune in like Tuesday morning, or I'm on today at 3 o'clock. Or I'll send them something when it's out and done.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a look at that. So I didn't tell them at all. And then I clicked on it and I was like, yeah, Dad, that's Derek. That's the thing this weekend. He was like, what? Then I was like, shit, I didn't actually tell him. It was really weird. Yeah, it was one of those weird like serendipity moments. Yeah, really, really good.
I love that. And
what you were saying...
Do you know Pat Dively? Or sorry, do you know how I met Pat Dively?
No. So don't say you listen to him on this podcast.
No, but this was even weirder to me what happened. When I came home to Ireland, my thing now is public speaking, so I do that as well on the side.
Oh, you did tell me, but tell the story. It's fantastic. Yeah, this is a good story.
I told you this.
You told me this, about you went.
So I went to his talk because I looked at all the speakers around and said, the only one I'm interested in or that I believe, let's say, is Pat Dively. I could listen to this guy. He's the man, right?
Yeah.
And I went to see him in Clontarf Castle. I walked in. Yeah, he's the dude. I walked into the room and like, this is just phenomenal setup. Unbelievable. Yeah. And he came in and everything was as good, even better than I thought it was going to be. The atmosphere was amazing. If anyone is listening to this and they want to go and see someone talk, go to one of his events. Yeah. It'll get you pumped in the best possible way. Like, you'll learn from it. You'll take something from it. So anyway, I was just sitting there in the middle of it and I was like, this guy is great. I want to be his friend.
Yeah.
And like, then I'm saying, oh, shut up, Derek, will you just listen to what you're saying? But at the end of it, I walked up and I shook his hand and went, thanks so much, Pat. That was phenomenal. Yeah. And he's like, thanks for coming. And I walked out and I was like, that is so great. And well done, Derek, for not trying to hug him or anything like that, right? But I went away and about 2 months later, I get this random message saying, hey, it's Pat Dively here. I was just wondering if you'd take me out wild camping. So I was like, what? I'm not even asking him. This guy that I want to be friends with, he's asking me to go out wild camping. And, right, he followed that up with saying, by the way, my dad watches all your videos.
You did tell me like this. You said. Yeah. What is it? But we've got very cool dads, obviously, is what the answer is there.
So we went out and that was the start of the series. Like, that's how that happened. And for me, it was like, this universe is mad. How did all this come to be? And I even told Pat, once I got to know him a little bit better, I went, by the way, Pat, I purposely set out to be your friend.
Amazing.
But I didn't even try. You came to me and said, here, do you want to hang out? So, you know, I'm not saying we're friends now, but we know each other to have a chat.
I have that thing with Damien Dempsey where I'm like, I know we're going to be best friends one day.
Do you,
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
Because
totally.
you watched, what was it, Cam with Horses?
Oh, I watched Cam with Horses. He's not in it, though.
He is in it.
Damien Dempsey.
Oh, sorry. No, that's Cardboard Gangsters.
Cardboard Gangsters is in. Yeah. There's actually the guy in Cam with Horses is Barry Keoghan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Hollywood says Keoghan. I call him Keown.
Right.
Is it Keoghan? Is it? Well, Hollywood are wrong, Shane, okay?
What's the other
chat? He's from Down the Bleeding Road. And the other guy is not Elvis. Jarvis. Not Jarvis Cocker. Jarvis Cocker. His name, I only tweeted about it the other night.
Here, they're both phenomenal.
Two of them. Unbelievable actors.
Yeah.
I can't find... Ah, it's gone. Jarvis, I think his name is something.
I was creeped out by the two of them watching it because it was so believable. Like, you know, as if you're there, I was like, I'd be terrified of
not Barry Keoghan, the lead guy, his name... Oh, Cosmo Jarvis.
That's it.
Beautiful man. But he's also in Cam with Horses, obviously, but he is in Peaky Blinders.
Right.
Which is very full circle to Aidan Gillen being my biggest fan.
It's meant to be.
It's nuts, isn't it? Yeah.
You know where he lives? Just go call in.
This is so weird.
On the way home,
I
do it tonight.
I swear to God, I was actually going like, I thought about it. I was like, what if I just like put a card in? Like, you know, first exchange postcard.
Great.
And be like, hi. You know,
if you want
extending an invitation, if you want to come on the podcast, it's going to be some buzz when I have him sitting on that chair and I get to tell him this story. We'll actually play this back too.
Take it a step further. Stand outside his house with coffee and donuts and say, hey, look at these.
But what I wanted to just play you very quickly before I let you go, because we're literally yapping here, which is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, We were talking about obviously social media and the internet and different things. But as much as it can be like a detriment, it is also a fantastic tool and a tool of connection.
I think so. Yeah.
And, you know, Fight Connect TV, obviously being my other baby, is like when I was choosing to name the company, the word connect was like a really important facet because I was like, I wanted... the idea of the audience, the viewer, to be able to connect with the person that I'm portraying on screen or the story that I'm saying or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So after I'd done your...
Hiking with Derek.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I got this message from a big fan of yours. She watches all your stuff, right? But she's from America. And her name is Heather McDowell. I'm just going to play. Do you know who it is, Heather McDowell?
Yes, not her name yet.
I do know, real quickly the message that she sent me. It was such a really cool message. We ended up chatting for like a couple of days. I'm going to play this, Shane, okay?
Hey there, I just want to let you know, I just watched your interview with Derek Cullen. I'm a big fan of his, and you were incredible. I am obviously from America, and Ireland is my favorite place on earth, and I followed Derek through all his hike around Ireland last year and have continued to watch his posts and that sort of thing. But I want to let you know that your interview was by far my favorite so far, and all of them have been fabulous. So you're just very real, and I loved learning more about you, and I hope you have a beautiful day.
And it was literally one of the nicest things.
That's lovely, isn't it?
I got it at like 6 o'clock in the morning on my way to, like, I was leaving the house.
Wow.
And I listened to it. And we had like a little chat back and forth. We were sending video messages to each other. And, you know, we're talking about, she's from Texas. Mm. And I was talking about being in the band and touring. And we'd done a festival called South by Southwest. And it was just, you know, after a couple of days, I was like, God, how crazy is it that I just had this really cool exchange of the last couple of days with someone who's on complete other side of the world, but we're you're bonded by a common interest or a connection in some way. And that's why what you're doing resonates with me so much. And that's why I was delighted when you asked me to go and do the hike and to be involved, is because it's, although we're in different fields, the kind of the message or the element of connection is still the same.
Right.
So.
And that's what I love about the outdoor stuff. Everyone's invited, you know.
Absolutely.
You don't need skills, don't need experience.
Absolutely.
You don't need to know how to start, you just do it.
Yeah, exactly. And that is exactly the way I am with this podcast, you know.
Yeah.
We have so many different people that sit on that chair and tell their story. And if you're one of our listeners, you don't have to know about it. Mm. But sit down and get a cup of tea and listen and enjoy the story. And if something in that story resonates with you, then, you know, you don't know where that will lead you or what spark that will lead on to.
Right.
You know, if someone listening to this, that maybe has a little spark of, I need to be in nature more. I need to be outdoors more. And now they might listen to this podcast and be like, do you know what? I'm going to find out where Derek Cullen lives and I'm going to go on a hike with him. And for one lucky winner, I will give out his address.
this is the creepiest end to any podcast.
Yeah, listen to it. We do it differently.
No, that's awesome. I love that.
Really cool. Listen to this. Yeah, yeah, I was like, I had to play that to you too. Because you do have so many followers online, you know, and
it's you know, like even with Heather, there's so many of them on there that are like, I wouldn't say exactly like Heather, but the best thing about the following that I have online, everyone's mad positive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's people
in, like, no one's going over the top with it, but everyone wants the best for each other.
Yes.
And for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's what we all have in common. So it's like everyone pumps that and it just kind of spreads like wildfire, you know? So that's what I love about it and love about having everyone watching the trips that I'm taking or the videos I make or whatever it is, you know?
Really, you're creating such a lovely community.
And that's why you want to give back, right? You see everything that they give to you and you know how it makes you feel. It's like, let's give it back.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Great chat.
Yeah, it is superb.
And I look forward to everything that happens in the future, like the next step that what you're going to do. I'm really excited. I know that loads of people were saying that you should get a slot on RTE, but I think you should dream bigger than RTE. Go global. What's like a good outdoor?
I'd love to do that, but you know,
National Geographic. Do they still have a channel?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
that'd be superb.
How cool would that be?
Yeah, it's all down the line. Like I wouldn't say I'm aiming for that, but that's where I'll probably go. Something
it'd
along
be
these lines.
So good. And I think, you know, not only is that an interesting topic, but you have a way of connecting with people that people like my dad, who really are just into drinking beer and watching football.
Yeah,
enjoy sitting down.
And I love the way you just put it, because that's what I want. You know?
I swear that he watches your shit because he gets to escape and feel like he's doing it. So I think it's some kind of like thing of, you know, well, I just took a 2-hour hike, so I need another 4 beers.
When
here,
the
you
pubs
know,
when the pubs open back up, me and your dad are going to escape for the night, right?
He'd love it. I told you before that I walked in one day when I went home, I got home pretty late, so I was like surprising them with my presence. And he was like in the kitchen on his iPad, and he was watching like a YouTube video of some guy driving a is it an RV?
Oh yeah, you were telling me this.
With a camera behind him, and he's just like driving on the road, and he's got the camera, and he's just, and it's just, it goes on for about 2 hours, and your man just like, oh, there's some sheep. Yeah, sheep. Love me some sheep. And then it's like, it's the worst camera angle and everything. Like, it's you know, one of those things that you look at and you get a bit headache.
Yeah.
My dad loved this fella. He just bought this RV and he's just driving around America and you just get to see what he sees. I'm like, it's such Big Brother, like, you know, right. Voyeurism or something. Anyway, there we go.
It's great though.
Yeah.
Really and good. Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I also wanted to say hello to Reuben Dunster. I know he's going to be listening to this, because when he saw you were coming out for the hike with me, he said, I can't believe this. I've been following Lydia from day one.
No way.
So he's a huge fan. And
what's his name?
Reuben Dunster.
Hello, Reuben.
Yeah. And he...
get really embarrassing. I forget that people watch anything or listen to anything.
He was floored when he saw that you're going to come out.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
And actually, remember there was a guy in the comments. You said, I think, did you say something
I remember Phil Thompson, isn't it?
Yeah. I think you would ask like what women would be good to get on the hike or whatever. Yeah. And like, they were really good suggestions, like Rosanna Purcell and like all these really cool.
Yeah.
And then there was just one little, what about Lydia? And then when I said we were doing it, he messaged me. He was like, hey, I was the guy who, like, you know, recommended you. I'm delighted to see that.
He was chuffed. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. So fair play to him.
That was great, because I really wanted to get more female guests out. And thanks for doing it for that reason.
No problem at all. I have no problem meeting strangers for hikes with cameras.
Yeah, and we didn't end up in the forest anyway, so you're all right.
Not this time, no. But listen, thank you so much for coming in, and best of luck in Donegal.
Thank you so much.
And the clothing line, where can people pick up some Out There products?
Yeah, Out There is actually relaunching on November 2nd.
How exciting.
Yeah, I might actually just launch it this weekend and not tell anyone. Like, for real, just put it up live.
Surprise.
And it's spelled outdare.ie. Or you can find it on the social channels, like Out There and Facebook. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because I think good things are going to come from it.
Absolutely. And it's very cool. So well done.
Thank you.
And best of luck with this. Thank you so much, Derek Cullen, for episode 51 of The First Exchange.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.